Okay, I'm hoping that this will be connected to a previous to the recording that was done previously before the phone got cut off. The topic is Yish and his Rashlus. The person who asked for me to talk about this probably meant, what do we do when we feel a sense of giving up, a sense of a sense of loss that we failed and that there's no hope for us at all? What do we actually do about that? I'll just repeat it in case the first part of the recording doesn't actually get spliced together with this one, so this will be self-contained. There's a famous case of the Maharam Mirottenberg. The Maharam Mirottenberg was abducted as a Godel Yisrael, Godel Ador. He was ransom was placed on him, a very high ransom. The Jewish communities in those days were already poor, you know, mostly, and there were wealthy Jews, of course, but it would have been a tremendous tircha on the tzibur to ransom him, and he refused to allow himself to be ransomed, even though he was going to miss Laning for the rest of his life. He was going to miss Megillus Esther the rest of his life. He was going to be doing the Seder by himself the rest of his life on Pesach. He was going to miss Baruch Hu the rest of his life, Kol Nidre the rest of his life. You know, he was going to miss everything the rest of his life. He would be in a prison in the late 1300s, for the rest of his life, which is what happened, and he died there. So, they say he taught Torah from the window and this and that. Okay, but his life was pretty much over. The Olam Hazeh part of his life was pretty much over for those years that he had left, and died in jail, an old man, alone, refusing to be ransomed. The reason that he refused to be ransomed is because he held that it's usur. Why is it usur? It's usur to ransom a yid. It's a mitzvah, pidyon shvuyim. But he said that it was part of a pattern. It wasn't just pidyon shvuyim, where this person, a yid, was thrown in jail because he didn't pay on his debt that he owed to the pirates, and this guy, and you're Poda the Shvuyim. This is a different case. Here, it's not just Pinyon Shvuyim like that. Here, it's a case of abduction by the government. Abduction by the government for the sake of gaining money. In a case like that, that's part of a pattern. It will create a pattern because the guy, the government that abducted this Gadol will simply abduct another Gadol after they finish and they see that this is a tremendous business. Wow, we got 40 million pounds of silver, so we're going to do it again. And they're just going to, they might even abduct him again and then ransom him again, cause him to be ransomed again. So doing that is usur, and he died in jail for that. He sacrificed seeing his grandchildren, great-grandchildren being at brisses, whatever, all the stuff that he lost out on for the rest of his life, however long that was, until he died, probably of pneumonia in those jails, and that was it. So after he died, they ransomed his body, I think. But anyway, I think the point was made already, you know what I mean? So, So this teaches us a very simple lesson that when it's part of a pattern, it's usur to ransom because it will just encourage more of the same problem. And I mentioned, and there was a case in a shul that I was in where somebody in the shul yelled at somebody in the shul, did something that embarrassed that person in front of the whole shul, and or whatever, in front of whoever could see in the shul, which was most of the shul, and this person later apologized, half hour later, apologized in front of the whole show, you know? Half hour later, apologized in front of the whole show for what he did. He said, I was wrong, shouldn't have done that, et cetera, et cetera. I thought to myself, because I'm a nice guy, I like seeing peace restored. I like, you know, everything to turn out okay and all that stuff, you know. I think that's quite normal. I was standing next to a guy who, in Shul, who is a very principled person, who I admire a lot for his leadership in the community and his lack of ego and being a man of good judgment and, you know, just a good person. And I respect him a lot. And to my shock, he turns to the guy next to him quietly and he said, that's not enough. We need to do something. And the guy says, why is it not enough? And he says, because this is a pattern of a wife beater, the same pattern as a wife beater, where he beats his wife, a person beats his wife, and then he apologizes and they make up, you know? And then he beats her again, and he's crying and apologizes, and he looks completely sincere, and he is. He's completely sincere. And he apologizes, and he does it again, and he beats her again. And then one day she's dead, you know? The man needs a restraining order in that marriage, you know? They need to separate. She needs to go to the house of Ruth or to Chana, where all the frum women who get beaten by their husbands regularly and repeatedly go. Something needs to change in the marriage. You can't just accept an apology, because this apology is accomplishing two things. It's making him feel like he's not the worst guy in the universe. He's not a disgusting pig, because he's restored his image and his self-image, both of those things. Number two, it encourages people who like peace and quiet and lack of conflict and everything to just be okay. It encourages normal people, in other words, including her, to say, you know, to have hope and say, well, things are going to get better now. It's going to be okay. Look how sincere he is. Goodbye. You know, and if you're in the therapy business, if you're a shrink or anything, know that a lot of these kinds of marriages, it's not just the pshat that they go back and forth like this, but very often there's torrid lovemaking and, you know, sex and great sex after they make up again after he just beat the living daylights out of her and she was unconscious. They end up getting so close for a short period of time afterward that it's like, oh my God, it's almost worth it to get beat up. It's almost worth it, because things get so much better and they get so close and the regret and the love comes pouring out. And it's like, you know, love always gets poured out when there's separation. You know, look in the Chassidish Sfarim regarding Tisha B'Av, you know, how the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Klal Yisrael by on Tisha B'Av afternoon, we put on tefillin because the love is greater, because Shas Preda, that's when the love comes pouring out. This is a little different. This is Shas Preda, is a pshat that he did something that broke them apart, and then he misses her, and he misses the closeness and the relationship, and he misses her trust in him. She misses feeling safe in his presence and being cared for and loved and whatever else she likes, and then that creates a longing, you know, pining for that, to be in that state again. And the person will often do anything to get back that stuff, that precious stuff. Okay? So, and then they end up, and then she ends up dead, you know, because the beatings get worse and worse. And the apologies get more and more sincere, and the beatings get worse, you know. They might get less frequent. Just like a lot of guys on Guard Your Eyes will say, oh, I'm making tremendous progress. I hit the 90 days. So you might be acting out less frequently, but look at the quality of your acting out and think to yourself, be honest with yourself, is the quality getting worse? Am I looking at crazier porn? Am I lying even more? Am I getting more comfortable in my lying? Or has the quality and the frequency both improved? That means something, 100%. That means a lot. But be honest with yourself about what improvements you've made, if you're going to say you've improved. Just going clean for a longer number of days and then acting out even crazier than ever proves nothing, because anybody can hold their breath for a while, okay? So be careful. That's not my point, though. I digress. I'm sorry. So back to the ikkar here. So the Myron Rutenberg's case is clear. The logic of it is clear. And the application of it here, I think, is also abundantly clear. There's a piece that I wrote on Guard Your Eyes a long time ago called The Nuclear Reset Button. I keep referring to it. But that post is related to this quite a bit. And it refers to the religious tshuva merry-go-round, okay? The tshuva merry-go-round experience where we do tshuva and we cry, Hashem, take me back, and this, and then you feel the tshuva. You feel the acceptance that Hashem accepted you back. You can feel it. I can feel it. We can feel this kind of stuff. And it's a high that can't really be described. Feeling of being taken back. If not for sinning, you wouldn't be able to feel this ahava, this closeness, this duvekus, this awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love for you. And then when it's gone, because 3 weeks have passed and you haven't sinned in 3 weeks, and there's nothing going on, but you know, you learn a Daf Gemara and this and that, and you try to find some artificial way to get that high again, like make a siyum maybe, something. You know, learn a Musa Sefer and feel something emotional about your Yiddishkeit or something, and it doesn't work because it pales in comparison for a frum addict for sure. It pales in comparison to that feeling of being taken back by the Rabbonu Shel Olam again after having fallen so low. You know, there's nothing quite like being taken back. That's the wife beater. Same story. That feeling of closeness that they achieve after he beats the hell out of her, excuse my language, and her eyes are purple. You know, she's got the raccoon, glasses look, you know. And she still got it purplish, you know, greenish. It's the black and blue's going away. And the love is incredible, incredible. How do you get that love back again? There's only one way. Get beaten up again. So no, I'm not saying that these women are hoping to get beaten up again so that they can feel the attachment again. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that they get accustomed to the pattern because there's such a tremendous payoff at the end. It becomes acceptable. So what do you do when a guy comes to you and he says, I'm miyayish, I feel so bad, I feel like I'm a failure. Do you tell the guy, put your arm around him and say, oh, Hashem loves the fact that you're struggling, that's good enough. That's good enough. Hashem loves the struggle so much. I love Reb Tzvi Meyer. I go to when I'm in Eretz Yisrael, I go by Reb Tzvi Meyer whenever I can. Really matter, but I mean, I try to go by him, and I go by the Sudas if I can. You know, Shalosh Sudas that he gives, and that's one of these messages that he gives is that you're not going to be perfect. So stop pretending that you're going to be perfect and that Hashem needs you to be perfect. Hashem loves the fact that you're trying and that you're struggling. He's not talking about a pattern of sex behaviors or something. He's not talking about a pattern of beating your wife where, you know, you resisted beating your wife once and that's the ikkar that you tried and that, no. He's talking about Aliyah in Avodas Hashem in a general way. In all the areas that we're all like that, all people are in that boat. Well, none of us are perfect, okay? And none of us will ever be perfect. Very important to recognize and accept 100%, B'lev Shalem, that I will never be perfect and that Hashem will never expect perfection from me, ever. All these things are important, and Reb Tzvi Meyer repeats these things over and over. He's not talking about a situation like this, obviously, where the encouragement ends up encouraging the pattern to continue, okay? And that's what you got. when we're talking about a situation of a guy who's been masturbating and looking at pornography and sneaking it and lying and faking, pretending that he's okay when he comes home and everything's fine, you know, and this and that, you know, encouraging this person and saying, Sheva Yipol equals tzaddik. You know, Sheva Yipol tzaddik. The common is Zohar HaKadosh says Sheva Yipol leads you to be a tzaddik. It's also to do that. There's no question. It's also to do that. All it's going to do is encourage this guy or this gal to continue in his or her way. That's all it's going to do. One time I called my sponsor, Jeff, and I said to him, oh, Jeff, I feel so bad. You know, I didn't act out, but I kind of played around and I tempted myself. I went and I looked at stuff I shouldn't look at and I'm going nuts and I just feel so bad. And he's quiet and I'm quiet. and I say to him, and he's quiet. And he goes, okay, Dov, so what, you want me to make you feel better? Like, what do you want me to do? You want me to pat you on the back and say, oh, you're a great guy, everything's okay, you're a good guy, it's going to be all right, just keep trying, I'm sure you're going to be fine. Is that what you want me to do? You just want me to make you feel better? Can't you sit in the pain a little bit? I mean, is it so bad for you to sit in the pain of admitting that you screwed up and seeing it and accepting that you screwed up? You can't sit in that pain. I have to rescue you from the truth, you know, that you did something damaging to yourself and stupid. You know, it was really stupid. Why would you do that? I'm an addict. Why would an addict gargle on, why would an alcoholic gargle on beer and spit it out? Why would you put yourself through that? What kind of stupid thing is that to do? Why'd you do that? Oh, well, there's no answer because I'm an addict. Okay, if the answer is because I'm an addict, so then accept the fact that you're an addict and you can't afford to do that kind of stuff. Admit it in your meeting. Admit it to your friends. Admit it to me, you know, to your safe people and stuff, not to strangers. That's never going to help. Admitting the stuff to total strangers who don't understand is not going to help. And look and see your powerlessness. Look and see how stupid you get when alcohol is introduced to the situation. You know, and then work the steps, you know, so that you don't have so much pain in life that you need to medicate yourself. Because the problem that all the alcoholics, gambling addicts, drug addicts, sexaholics, lust addicts, if you're an addict, not the guard your eyes thing that you have a Yetzirah, that's not an addict, please. You know, when guard your eyes says that, they don't really mean that everybody's an addict. They're just using the term loosely. But I mean, if you're really an addict and you recognize that you are ill and the problem isn't the internet and the problem isn't schmutz and princess out there, the problem is you. And it's always been you. And when you were alone in Benes Manim and there was no internet, you were still masturbating yourself because you have body parts that don't disappear. And 100 years ago, you would have been doing the same thing probably before there was photographs or internet or anything. So whatever. So anyhow, it's like, come on, let's get some real, you know, let's get honest. Now, if you, you know, obviously, again, this touches on what I was saying before. I don't have the right and nobody has the right to say that to tell you you're an addict. We don't tell other people that they're addicts, okay? And we don't tell people, you're an addict, you need to go to meetings. We don't say that to people. At least humble addicts don't say that to people when they're doing 12-step sharing, you know, with a prospective person. But what we do is we share our own experience and we say, you know, this is what I saw in myself. If you see it in yourself, maybe you're an addict, you know, consider it and, you know, explore it yourself. You're the only one who has the right to tell yourself one way or the other. Because guess what? If anybody else tells you, including God himself, you won't believe him and you will not do the things that are necessary and neither will I. I will not do the things that are necessary unless the decision's coming from me because I get down on my knees, I get broken, and I realize, good Lord, I have failed. Rabboni Shel Olam. I really, it's not like, oh, I'll try again, I'll get up again, I'll brush myself off, and, you know, straighten up, chin up, and I'll go again. I need to realize at this point, based on the repetitive nature of my problem, that I have a problem and I need some help. I cannot continue the same derech. Cannot continue the same derech. In AA and Essanon and Al-Anon, they have a saying, if nothing changes, nothing changes. Which sounds funny. What they mean is, if nothing changes, then nothing changes. If I don't make any significant change in my lifestyle, my choices, my behavior pattern, then nothing will change. So, for example, what needs to change? Typical guy who's a firm guy into the masturbation pornography. What he says, oh, I know what to change. I'll make a nether and a toxic shvuah that I'll never do this and this. And if I do, that's not a change. I'm not discouraging you from trying toxic shvuahs, okay? Please, go ahead and do whatever you want. I'm just saying that that's not a change, okay? Because you're still isolating. You're still doing things in secret. And you're still the one in the driver's seat. You're still the one with the power. You're still choosing to do this, and you're still in charge the whole way. And you still know that, you know, you're doing it your way. And it's based on isolation, hiding, and quote-unquote safety. A person who actually picks themselves up and goes to a therapist, a good therapist, who knows the subject, and I would ask a therapist when you go to him or her, do you tell everybody who comes to you and talks about their sex habits, masturbation habits, pornography habits, do you tell every single one of them that you're an addict? Or do you look at each case individually? You know, I think that's a fair question to ask in your interview of the therapist. You know, I don't know if they'll answer you honestly, but I think most of them will. I really do. I know some of these guys and gals. I know some of them, and I trust them to answer it honestly. The ones that I know, there's none of them that I've ever gotten the impression that they wouldn't say it honestly. They'd tell you. I can only assume they'd tell you the truth, which is no. I look at every case individually. I don't just tell everybody, oh, you're an addict. You need to go to meetings. You need to go to SA or SLAA or SAA or SCA or whatever, you know? You know, or you need medication. There's no one way for everybody, and no one thing works for everybody, obviously. You know, here you are. You're all from people. You have the Torah. You've been using the Torah. Some of you who are listening to this call, I know, are 60 years old and still acting out. You've been using the Torah for 30, 40, some of you even longer years, and it's still failing. So you've got the best tool in the world, the Torah HaKadosha. You've got the Torah HaKadosha, and you've been using it, and it's failed for you. It hasn't worked for you. And I know everybody who's really from and holding the Degel HaTorah wants to say, oh, it's because you weren't using the Torah properly. Okay, well, Ein Chavish Mater Atmo Mibesa Asurim. You, if you haven't used the Torah properly until now, guess what? You're not nesugel to use the Torah properly. It's not the Torah's fault. It's you, me. You know, it's not going to work for you because you need to do something else. And there's this thing Chazal say called Derech Eretz Kodma LaTorah. And that means that Torah is not the answer. Derech Eretz is the answer for a Derech Eretz problem. And as long as you want to frame your problem as a religious Avera Mitzvah Tshuva thing, then you're going to keep using Torah as a hammer to hammer a screw into a piece of wood. It's not going to work. Besides, the Torah is not a hammer. Mishtamish b'taga chalaf. If a person uses a Torah as a shovel, he's going to die. Another pshat, obviously, is that if you use a Torah for what it's not made for, you're going to fail, you know? your success is going to go away. You're not going to succeed. You know, it's bullshit. You know, so anyway, what do you do about hisrashnus? What do you do what's his name? Yish. Well, Yish and hisrashnus, the direction I'm going is to try to explain that Yish and hisrashnus are sometimes the only hope that a person will ever have to finally changing and doing something different. And when I say doing something different, usually the common denominator between all the behaviors that you and I do in our failing years, the years and years that we fail at stopping and keep on getting worse and worse and worse over time, the one common denominator is isolation. It's usually lying, faking, putting on a face, shalom bias, the Torah says, right? Vadoni zakein, right? Hashem lies for shalom bias. Mishanem epnei hashalom. That's the 11th commandment for the from sex addict, you know? The 11th commandment is mishanem epnei hashalom. That keeps us alive. We breathe, mepia anu chayim, you know? It's to, you know, put on a face, put on a thing, you know? Well, there's all manner of good-sounding excuses. But the bottom line is, we end up losing because of all the excuses, and we stay the same because of isolation. And that's usually the killer, because isolation ultimately, keeping the secret to myself, ultimately is arrogance. Ultimately, it's gaiva, because there's an inability and a refusal to accept responsibility and to admit defeat, and to admit that I am ill and I am, for some reason, even though they say Hashem doesn't give any sight into a person he can't handle, blah, 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 all these ideas pop into my head that they're all excuses for me to keep fighting. They're all excuses. It's not a nisayon. This is not an avera. It's an avera, avada, but it's not an avera that I need to approach as an avera. It's an avera that if I want to stop doing it, I need to approach it as a mental disease. If I see that I have a pattern, if I see that it's progressing over time. And when I say progressing, I don't mean just progressing in terms of quantity. Well, maybe you used to do this and this once every day. Now you do it only once a week. That's not always a good sign. It depends on what you're doing. And it depends on the overall pattern. And lev yodea moras nafsho, as Reb Tzvi Meir often says. Lev yodea moras nafsho. You know if you're really getting better or if you're really getting worse. You know. Frequency is not the only determining factor. You know? It's not the only relevant factor. Anyhow, so sometimes Yish is the most precious thing you will ever have. Sometimes Yish and Hisrashlus, in trying to not change, giving up for a person, usually when a person feels tremendous discouraging, usually I'm not talking about if it's your first time or second time, I'm talking about if there's a pattern, and you feel tremendous yish and hisrashlus. It's not yish and hisrashlus at being alive and I just feel like it's all pointless. No, the yish and hisrashlus, the pain, is a yish in remaining the same guy. I feel so discouraged, like I feel like I won't be able to remain the same guy and keep this a secret. I feel like I'm losing my lifestyle of respect to everybody, that everybody thinks that I'm the greatest, best bachur in yeshiva and this and that. I see that, you know, the other shoe is dropping. The doom is falling on me. It seems that I'm going to have to open up to somebody and tell someone the truth, the whole truth, everything. I'm going to have to spill the whole beans to somebody. And I know the way I spilled the beans. And that's very, very discouraging and scary because it means that I have failed at this lying contest and isolation contest and doing it myself, which is the holy grail of all from guys. They want to be able to stay the same. All these guys call me and they say, I didn't tell my wife. You know, did you tell your wife before when you were engaged that you had this problem? Yeah, I mentioned it. You didn't tell her the full extent of it, right? No, not at all. And it's like, well, what are you doing? You know? So now, am I getting into the topic of what to tell in dating and what to tell your wife if you're married and you see that you're behaving this way? What to do if you're caught? How much do you tell her? I'm not getting into that topic on this call, but that is an important topic. And I wouldn't cover it in a Guard Your Eyes call because Guard Your Eyes people encompass a wide scope of people who would misinterpret what I'm saying horribly. And they're not addicts, and they don't need to change, really. They need to just try harder because they're not addicts at all, and they're never going to be addicts. And all they really do need to do is to learn how to try harder and to try smarter because they're not addicts. And these people going and telling their wives they're going to ruin their shalom bias over what? Over what? Over nothing. Because it's not even the big nisayon of their lives. It's just an avera that they're doing. Let them talk to a rabbi. Let them get good advice from a Rav who's got experience or from a therapist who's got good experience, and let them ask the therapist whether they should tell their wives or not. And in many cases, the therapist would say no. In many cases, the therapist would say yes. But I'm sure as heck not going to be the guy who's going to put that on my plates, which aren't so strong and aren't so broad. You know, making rules for people is not what I'm here for. I'm here to share, you know. And I don't speak for SA, Sexaholics Anonymous, the group that I'm a member of for 20 years, Baruch Hashem, sober, one day at a time. It gave me my life back. Hashem reached me through SA in that way and reaches so many other people through SA, Jews and non-Jews. And certainly SA isn't speaking for anybody to do, you know, to make these decisions. And the only thing that we can speak for is be honest with yourself. That's it. Be honest. Be true to yourself. Be honest to yourself. And if what you're doing isn't working, don't call that hisrashlus and yish, because it's not hisrashlus and yish. It's yish of the hope that you will not have to really change. That's the yish, quote unquote. It's not really yish. It's a feeling of, oh my God, I feel the impending doom that I'm going to have to actually change. Something's going to actually change before anything will change. I'm going to have to open up and shame myself in front of, you know, a therapist, you know. Or if you decide to go to Sexaholics Anonymous meetings, you know, and there are hundreds of people in every major city probably going to SA meetings, in every major Jewish city, big Jewish areas, trust me, there's plenty guys going, and they've been going there for 10, 15, 20 years already, and they're not found out in the community, thank God. This is why SA survives and survives well and succeeds, and why Alcoholics Anonymous survives and survives well, because it's anonymous outside the group. It's anonymous outside the group. Joining a 12-step group will not destroy your children's chances at getting shidduchim. You know, because if it would, then guess how many people would be going to meetings from Jewish neighborhoods now? None. Because as soon as they're found out, it'll be the end of the world. But it hasn't happened because God protects us one day at a time, not just as individuals, but as a group. He protects us. And it's still anonymous. Again, not Guard Your Eyes anonymous. There's no anonymity on Guard Your Eyes. Guard Your Eyes is a place where you're secret. You're unknown to the people that you're talking to, and you're honest with everybody because they can't figure out who you are. That's the only reason that you're honest And by the way, people are still not honest on Guard Your Eyes. I've met many people on Guard Your Eyes who said they told their whole story on Guard Your Eyes, and even wrote out these detailed, horrible sounding, gewalt, schreckliche stories. And when I speak to them in person, the truth in almost every case, the truth comes out eventually that the real behaviors that they're doing were actually far worse than what they were writing on Guard Your Eyes, where suddenly now I can be honest and open. You know, it's a funny thing. I started the Desperados call on Guard Your Eyes many years ago, I think many years, whatever, about 8-9 years ago, I think. And I think about eight years ago, I think. And could have been seven, I'm not absolutely sure. A whole bunch of guys who were posting on Guard Your Eyes on the old website, the old blue and white, the old website, a whole bunch of guys came on. I think it was 11 guys or something, or 12 guys, 15 guys in that first Desperados group. And I told my story explicitly, clearly, and without fear. I told my story to the group, because I only give the PIN number to guys who I speak to on the phone and get a sense that this guy is for real and safe, you know, and he's sincere, you know, then I trust you. If you're sincere, I trust you. So then I told my whole story. And once they hear my story, then guess what? Once they hear my story and they hear I tell my whole story and I didn't drop dead, oh my God, how could it be? Then they get the guts to tell their stories, and they told their stories. In the meantime, they have been posting on Guard Your Eyes. I finally found a safe place where I can tell the truth. It's unbelievable. This website saved my life, blah, 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 blah. And they're still acting out. Okay. and they write their stories down, which we do on the Desperados call. It's modeled after 12-step fellowships, you know, generally. And they shared their stories. And my hair's popping out. My hair's standing up. Because here's the guys who were sharing for already 2 years, some of these guys, before I even came on, the 2 years or more, they were sharing on Guard Your Eyes, you know, stories about themselves. You know, what do they say? Back in those days, they didn't say pornography, they didn't say masturbation, because that was considered, quote-unquote, triggering, like nivel pe or something. So they say P and M. I was doing P and M, M and P, gewalt, another M and P. I did P again, I did M again, you know, very snares. So they were telling the, quote-unquote, truth, you know, because now, Guard Your Eyes, they're finally in a place where they can tell the truth. They don't have to be afraid because nobody else can figure out who they are, Baruch Hashem. And then what happened? They're telling a whole different story. And you would think that now in a group of live people on the phone where the voices are being used and each person introduces themselves by name, because no one can come on the Desperados call if they don't introduce themselves on the call by first name, you know, within their own voice, not with a hand or a mask. You know, that doesn't pass for our call. If you're like that, then you're an observer. You're not safe. A Meitzitz Min HaRakim is dangerous to everybody he's watching. So you got to get off the call. So, you know, so everybody who's on there is also trusting the group. I trust you with my secrets, you know. And then what happens? There they should be even more afraid. No, there they open up finally for the first time in their lives. Whereas on Guard Your Eyes, behind a fake name on the computer, talking to fake people, fake name people on the computer also, no, you can finally say everything. And they said half the story. The most shameful things, the most dangerous things they were doing, that they kept hidden. Why? Why do you have to keep it hidden? I thought this is the one safe place in the world. And now when you're in a group where you're exposing yourself, using your voice that someone might recognize, oh, it's the end of the world. Now here you're saying the truth. Why? Why? It's the opposite. Ella, what? Because honesty breeds honesty. And when you take measures to create a safe place, then it's safe. If people have bags on their heads and they walk into a meeting with eye holes. So now you can see my eyes. You can't see who I am, but I can see you. You got to leave. Guard Your Eyes is a big group of a bunch of people who all come into the same room, and everyone's wearing bags on their heads, so everybody feels comfortable. Okay? And that has an important place. And Guard Your Eyes has saved hundreds of lives and families. Not thousands, I'm sure, but hundreds. It will save thousands, Be'ezus Hashem, but hundreds of lives have been saved through Guard Your Eyes because these people came to see how sick they are, and the addicts among them got therapy and, in many cases, 12 steps, got sober, and started recovery, you know? It's an amazing thing. And it's all because the fear factor was removed, you know? It's all because a safe place was created, you know? And not on Guard Your Eyes. A semi-safe place was created on Guard Your Eyes, and these people, from opening up a little bit, were introduced to therapists who they could really open up to. They were introduced to addicts in recovery who they could really open up to. When you hear a guy sharing his story honestly with you, you realize, oh my God, he's a safe person. He's trusting me. I can trust him now, you know? And that's the way that things have worked for alcoholics the world over for all these years in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the way it works in the other 12-step fellowships for gambling and sex addiction and lust addiction and everything else. It works. It works if you work it. If you don't work it, it doesn't work. If you read about it, you talk about it, it doesn't work. You've got to do it if you want it to work. And that's what people have discovered. So if Hisrashleth and Yish, in my great hope of not having to change and being able to maintain my exact same lifestyle, and you know, is killing me, guess what? Maybe it's the best thing that ever happened to me. You know? I even know of people who have been arrested who just keep saying, thank God, thank God, thank God I was arrested. Very soon after they were arrested, by the way. Thank God, thank God, thank God. Like minutes. Initially, it's the end of the world. But once they're resigned to their fate and they realize, one of the first things out of the mouths of many people is, thank God, this is finally going to come to an end. Why? How do they know? Well, because their lifestyle of faking has come to an end. There are two ways to do it. One way is yourself. One way is for others to do it for you, God forbid. But it'll happen. You know, every addict will eventually get caught, I believe. You're not James Bond. You're going to get caught eventually. The question is, do you want to get caught now, you know, in recovery, or do you want to get caught in acting out, you know? So if Yish is going to help you give up running, then, you know, running from actual recovery, if you need it, then please be miyayish to your heart's content. You know, now suicide's a problem, God forbid, lo aleinu, you know, and not just suicide in the classic sense, in the technical sense, but suicide on other levels, God forbid, of people doing really stupid things, you know. People do very stupid things when they're desperate and they just have no idea what to do. So because that's a human behavior that exists, and it's real, because of that, it's important for people who feel that they might be a danger to themselves to open up about that and get help. There's nobody else. Im ein ani li, mi li. Im ani la atzmi, ma ani. You know, if a person, 12-step recovery is about one thing, self-responsibility. Finally taking responsibility for yourself instead of playing a victim. Nobody who gets, God forbid, a diagnosis of cancer says, "Oy vey, I surrender, I give up the fight, and therefore, and now I'm just going to go back to work, and I'm going to just wait until I die." People don't do that. People get a diagnosis of a hopeless disease that there is no cure for, and they say, "Well, but maybe I can learn how to live with it. If I do chemo and I get surgery if necessary, maybe I'll live." And there are many people who live a full and great life for 50 years after they get cancer diagnosis, God forbid, because they treat it. There are many who die, but there are many who survive. Probably more survive than die. In fact, in some cancers, very few die. But, you know, it's, you know, come on. You don't give up when you know, no, but you give up on not having cancer. That's what you got to give up on. If not having cancer is something that you can't give up on, you know, and you consider that the yish, giving in to the fact that you have cancer is the yish, then you need to be miyayish. That yish you need. Because in your mind, having cancer means you're going to die. That needs to change. That's a problem. That means that you're giving up on being alive or you're hopeless. Nobody is hopeless. If you go to an AA meeting or, you know, if you go to a 12-step meeting, you'll meet people who seemed far more hopeless than you are. And this applies to SA, SAA, SLA, whatever the group is, all these 12-step groups on lust, addiction, so same thing. If you go to the meetings, you'll meet people who are far more hopeless than you are. And you're sure that you're the most hopeless one sometimes. I know. People say this. But trust me, there are many more people, and I might be one of them, who are more hopeless than you were, was more hopeless than you are. And yet here we are, sober for years, thank God. You know, one day at a time, and life is good. Life is good. Pretty much everything about it is great. And it's only because of sobriety and because of the Rabbanu Shalom, you know. And we're not holding our breath every day. You know, I get these calls, "Dov, I just can't hold myself. I don't know what to do. I just can't hold myself. After a week, 2 days, 3 days, oy vey, 3 weeks, forget it. I can't hold myself." In recovery, you don't hold yourself anymore. God holds you. Everything's going to be fine. You learn how to live that way. Goyim all around the world do it. Millions of goyim all around the world do it. A yid comes to me and says, that's for the goyim. What? A yid can't let go? A yid can't let God take care of him? A yid can't learn how to do that by working the steps so that you never have to drink again, so that you never have to act out again? You can't learn how to do that? Of course you can. Come on. All of a sudden, the humility comes. Oh, not me. I'm not good enough. Oh, this Shagetz can, but not me. And everything else, you look down, you spit on the Shagetz. Oh, he's just a Shagetz. He's disgusting. And then when it comes to you, all of a sudden, you know, he can do it, but I can't. Come on. I see this all the time. We are afraid. And our yish is usually just fear. It's not yish. It's fear to face the truth. That's what yish is usually. Yish is usually just fear. And it dresses up with the philosophy that, oh, it's the end of the world. I feel so depressed. Depression is da-da-da. It's just fear. You're just afraid. We're terrified. We're a terrified lot. We're sure it's the end of the world if I do this. It's the end of the world if I do that. Pretty much any real change, oh, I can't do that. That'll be the end of the world. And there are excuses at every turn. When it comes to real change, the excuses come. You know, that's where we need help. We need help. That's the problem. Fear is the problem. And we need a little education. We need a little education. You know, there are actually Shabbatonim where hundreds of Chassidish Yidden and their spouses get together for Shabbatons in recovery. There are Shabbatons, there are international conferences in Sexaholics Anonymous where, you know, there's 30 shtreimels in the, you know, in the room for the Shabbos Suda. You know, and thousands of goyim there, and then it's, you know, and there's, you know, 250 from Yidden there with, you know, husbands and wives in recovery. You know, many of them sober. Many of them sober for years. You know, this stuff is real, you know, it's real. There is hope, but there's no hope to remain the same guy that you always were. That there's no hope for. Sorry. If you're an addict, there's no hope for the fantasy of remaining the same person you always were. And that's the only place where bravery is needed in the program, in recovery. You need some bravery. And bravery doesn't mean you're not afraid. Bravery means even though you're afraid, you do the right thing. You do what's best for yourself. Not for your neshama, not for your this, not for your tahara, not for Hashem. For yourself. It's called enlightened self-interest. And I give a bracha to everybody that just if Hashem helped me have enlightened self-interest to do the selfish, good kind of selfish thing and take care of myself, even though it meant being afraid and being scared, and introduced me to safe people and good therapy and safe people who are in recovery who could actually help me, I give a bracha that I know is going to be Makoyim. I see it being Makoyim every day. That if you need it, you're going to find it too. And all you need to do is give up on winning it your way. Give up on beating it your way. Give up on continuing the lie, continuing the fakery, continuing the self-deceit and the pretending. Admit who you are to safe people who understand and who can actually share what they've been given by the Rabbanu Shlomo with you, and you will be okay. Because in truth, the only people who the 12-step program was really, really designed for are people who came to the point where they realized that on their own power, there is no hope left for them. They need a power greater than themselves. Otherwise, forget it. And if you think that that's the end of the world, then you haven't met the Rabbanu Shalom yet. No matter how many years you've been from, you haven't met the Rabbanu Shalom yet. If you really in your heart think that it's the end of the world if I have to really depend on him, because guess what that means? It means that you think it's all a joke, and you think that he's really not there, and you think he really can't help you. And trusting him and begging him to take it away isn't going to work, because you can't. God won't take it away from you until you give it up first. And if you can't give it up, that's what the Chevra Shas is for. That's why there's groups. That's why there are other sexaholics who are willing to look you in the eye and say, guess what? I give it up. And I'm having the best life I've ever had. And I know to you it feels like it's getting your legs cut off. It's the end of the world. And I know on Guard Your Eyes everybody acts like it's the end of the world. My Averis are killing me. It's the most depressing thing. I want to give it up. If I could give it up, I would cut it off with a knife for my own body. Give me a knife. I'll cut it off. I'm waiting. I'm dying to quit. I can't stand it anymore. All lies. Because when you're given the opportunity to actually turn your back on it and live without it, everybody runs the other way until you've suffered enough, until you've had enough pain. So, you know, so the next time somebody comes over to you and says, I acted out and wants encouragement, you can give him a lot of encouragement that, you know, if he really, really wants to get better, he'll be able to do that by getting out of his comfort zone and really getting real help. But if all he wants to do is for you to make him feel better and tell him, Ein shum yish ba'olam klal, asur li hityayesh, Hashem loves you anyway, and da da da, of course Hashem loves you. But he's going to love you and you're still going to sink lower. He loved you before, and he'll love you after. And he'll love you until forever. After you die, he'll love you also. You know? The famous line, the Rishoner said, I forget which one. The Rishner said, I think it was Yisrael, if I'm thinking the right place, the right person, said that the Rishner said, I wish that I loved the worst Russia as much as Hashem loves the greatest tzaddik. I wish that I loved the greatest tzaddik of the door, which was the Maggid, himself, as much as Hashem loves the worst Russia. I don't even love the Maggid as much as Hashem loves the worst Russia. That's how much I love the Maggid. Not even as much as Hashem loves the worst Russia. So the love of Hashem is endless, just like everything good about him. Everything about him that's real is good, and everything about him is endless. And, you know, so that's not going to change. You won't lose Hashem's love. If that's all you're trying to get, so then you're just a stupid idiot, because that's free. That's like breathing. You know, you want to breathe, but you don't care how you live. Okay, you're stupid. You're throwing your life down the toilet. Oh, as long as I can breathe, it's okay. As long as Hashem loves me, it's okay. That's not going to go away. You know, what's going away is the meaning and quality of your life getting trashed. Don't let that happen. Don't let that happen. Don't look for comfort just so that you don't have to change. All right. And above all, have a great day. Bye-bye.